Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Parashat Toldot. Before we begin our study of this week's parasha, in which we will focus on the character development of Rivka Imenu, I'd like to go back to the first encounter of Rivka and Yitzchak, which we discussed at the end of last week's parasha. As we mentioned, Rivka's first sight of Yitzchak took place as he was bent in prayer, encased in holiness as he communed with Hashem, which caused her to fall off her camel in reflection of his humility. The Netziv teaches that this encounter served as the foundation of the entire relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, which frames the narrative of this week's parasha. He notes that the relationship of Yitzchak and Rivka is markedly different from that of the other Avot and their wives. When Sarah and Rachel were bothered by something, they confronted their husbands directly. Sarah had no inhibitions about saying to Abraham, "Garesh et ha'ama hazot ve'et bena, ki lo yirash im bini im Yitzchak. Send away the maidservant and her son, because he will not inherit with alongside my son." Rachel, when she was suffering from the lack of her children, confronted Yaakov and said to him, "Havali banim. I demand that you give me children. You're not davening hard enough on my behalf. You already have your own children. Perhaps that's enough for you, and you're not concerned enough about me." Rivka, in contrast, does not have the confidence to confront her holy husband directly, and she seeks other ways of achieving her ends. She is too much in awe of her husband to challenge him face to face. According to the Netziv, this dynamic was a function of Hashem's direct intervention. Hashem staged that first meeting just so that this dissonance would ensue, so that Yaakov would receive his blessing in precisely the manner in which he did. The narrative of this week's parasha begins 20 years after the events of the previous one. We're told that Yitzchak was 40 years old upon his marriage to Rivka, and now, after suffering 20 years of infertility, the couple engaged in persistent, heart-wrenching prayer that they might bear a child. The pasuk states, "Vayetar Yitzchak l'Hashem lenochach ishto ki akarahi, vayeater lo Hashem v'atar Rivka ishto." And Yitzchak prayed to Hashem opposite his wife because she was barren, and Hashem accepted his prayer, and Rivka, his wife, conceived. The term "vayetar," denoting tefillah, is an unusual one, indicating particularly penetrating tefillah, prayer that is compared, as Rashi teaches, to a pitchfork, which can overturn a heavenly decree as a pitchfork overturns straw. Yitzchak prays lenochach ishto, facing his wife, which doesn't seem like a very commendable stance. But the Malbim explains that what the pasuk is telling us is that Yitzchak's prayer was concerning his wife. He had been promised that he would have children, and he was secure in his faith that Hashem's promise would be fulfilled. His concern was that Rivka should be the one to bear his children, that he would not be compelled, like his father, to take a second wife. He recognized Rivka's intrinsic value, and he wanted his children to be hers. His tefillah was accepted, and Rivka became pregnant. She experienced pain and discomfort far beyond the norm, and we're told, "Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem." She went to seek Hashem, to find out from prophets or teachers why she was experiencing such pain. And the Chachamim ask, why didn't she go to her husband? Why didn't she ask Yitzchak? And this again is attributed to the Netziv's teaching. She was too much in awe of him to let him know that she was suffering. Perhaps it was a reflection on her suffering was a reflection on her character, which might have been lesser than his. Therefore, she sought guidance elsewhere. She went either to Avraham or to Shem Va'ever to try to understand what was happening within her. And she was informed prophetically that she bore twins who, even in the womb, were struggling with one another and who would father nations with diametrically opposing value systems. When the time came for her to give birth, the firstborn of the twins emerged with a ruddy complexion, hairy and fully formed, and was named Esav. His brother was born holding on to the heel of the first and was called Yaakov, from the root Ek Akev, meaning heel. The brothers grew up, Esav becoming an ish yodea tzayid, an expert hunter, and Yaakov an ish tam yoshev ohalim, a pure man who sat in tents, a shepherd, introspective and studious. Rav Hirsch shares an important educational insight in explaining this pasuk. He notes that the Torah does not hide from us the fact that the Avot sometimes made mistakes, and this, in his opinion, is one such instance. He sees an implied criticism in the words of Chazal that until the age of 13, Yaakov and Esav were treated identically. They attended the same school, followed the same curriculum. Only after school let out did their differences become manifest, with Yaakov heading off to the Beit Midrash and Esav out to the fields. Rav Hirsch sees this as a parental failure to fulfill the dictum Chanuch lana'ar al pi darko, educate a child in keeping with his own character. It should have been obvious to Yitzchak and Rivka that a Yaakov and an Esav can't both succeed in the same educational system. Education has to be tailored to the needs of the individual child. The pasuk tells us that Yitzchak favored Esav, ki tzayid befiv, for his hunted prey was in his mouth. Rashi offers two explanations for this phrase. According to the pshat, the simple meaning within the context, Yitzchak favored Esav for he provided him with food, the products of his hunting expertise. Alternatively, the Midrash suggests that Yitzchak loved Esav because Esav ensnared him with verbal traps, asking questions that made it appear that he was precise in his observance of the law, while in fact he was mocking that very law. Rivka, on the other hand, who knew prophetically that her sons were diametrically opposed to one another, valued Yaakov and his commitment to spiritual development. The Torah relates that one day, in a fit of hunger after returning from a day in the field, Esav sold his birthright to Yaakov for a bowl of lentil stew. For the birthright, which carried with it spiritual responsibilities, was of little value to Esav. Perek Chavav, chapter 26, seems to interrupt the narrative with an unrelated episode. Due to a famine in Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak prepared to follow his father's example and head towards Mitzrayim for relief. Hashem appeared to Yitzchak and told him that he may not leave Eretz Yisrael, and reiterated the promise that Yitzchak's descendants would inherit the land. Hashem tells Yitzchak, Shchon ba'aretz asher omari lecha, reside in the land, which I will tell you. Unlike Avraham, who claimed the land by traveling through it, Yitzchak is to be the paradigm for settling in the land. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah explains the implication of shchon in two ways. Build a neighborhood, a shchuna, by planting and harvesting, establishing a stable presence in the land. Moreover, create a place in which the Shechina, Hashem's presence, may come to rest and be made manifest in the land. Further, the Midrash explains, the reason Yitzchak may not leave the land, even to find respite from the famine, is that having been offered up to Hashem on the Mizbeach as a pure sacrifice, he remains sanctified and cannot leave the land, for Chutz La'aretz will not sustain his holiness. Thus, Yitzchak remains within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Gerar, roughly the area of Aza on today's map, ruled by Avimelech, with whom Abraham had made a peace treaty. Initially, Yitzchak presented Rivka as his sister, but one day Avimelech noted that the intimacy between Yitzchak and Rivka was that of husband and wife, not brother and sister. Confronting Yitzchak, he accused him of very nearly causing him to sin by taking his wife, and Yitzchak explained that he had acted out of fear for his life. Avimelech invited Yitzchak to stay and settle, commanding his people not to touch him or his wife, and Yitzchak prospered, arousing the jealousy of the people of Gerar. The Plishtim, the people of Gerar, stopped up the wells that Abraham had dug during his sojourn there, and Yitzchak redug the wells and gave them the same names as Abraham had called them. Haktav HaKabbalah asks, why it's so important for the Torah to record that Yitzchak redug and renamed the wells as his father had done. He explains that Avraham had given the wells names that reflected Hashem's authority in the world, such as calling the well Hashem Kel Olam, Hashem, Master of the Universe, so that people would say, I'm going to get water from Hashem Kel Olam, and in that way the concept that the water came from Hashem would become rooted in their consciousness. Thus the pasuk is informing us not only that Yitzchak dug wells, but that he continued his father's legacy of bringing people closer to Hashem. Rav Soloveitchik takes this idea a step further and says that while these wells reflected Yitzchak's continuation of his father's work, Hashem wanted more of him. After he had reopened Abraham's wells, Hashem appeared to him and reiterated the promise of the land, adding, Ba'avur Avraham Avdi, for the sake of Avraham my servant. The Rav explains that Yitzchak then understood that he had not yet developed his own unique religious approach, that he had to dig his own wells. He does so, and when Hashem appears to Yaakov in turn and again reiterates the promise of the land, he identifies himself as Elokei Avraham Avicha ve'Elokei Yitzchak. The Rav goes on to say, that's why our Shmoneh Esrei opens with the phrase Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak ve'Elokei Yaakov, rather than simply saying Elokei Avraham Yitzchak ve'Yaakov. Each of the Avot had a unique way of relating to Hashem. They did not merely reflect Avraham's worldview, they broadened and deepened it. And so too must we identify our own personal strengths and characteristics in our individual service of Hashem while conforming to the communal norms established by our forefathers. The final chapter of the parasha opens as Yitzchak recognized that he's aging and his eyesight has weakened. Yitzchak expressed his intention to bless his son Esav as the eldest son. He was unaware that Esav had sold his birthright to Yaakov. Rivka overheard Yitzchak instructing Esav to hunt and prepare a meal for him, to nourish his soul that he might bless him, and meanwhile instructed Yaakov to disguise himself as Esav by bringing Yaakov a meal that she would prepare, by bringing Yitzchak a meal that she would prepare, and Rivka dressed Yaakov in Esav's clothing and placed goat skins on his arm, lest Yitzchak try to identify him by touch. Esav was hairy and Yaakov was not. Yaakov expressed reluctance to comply. Yaakov's midah is emet. He adheres to the truth no matter what, but ultimately obeyed his mother's will. Throughout the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka, while we know that there was love and mutual respect, which we've seen throughout the parasha, we also know that there was this lack of openness in Rivka's communication with Yitzchak. She knew prophetically that the bracha was intended for Yaakov, but at this point in their relationship, she has no way to communicate to Yitzchak without compromising his integrity that is so. Rivka wants Yitzchak to see for himself the true nature of his two sons. He imagined that if Esav were blessed with all the good that this world has to offer, he would use it in the service of Hashem. But Rivka knew otherwise. Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch explains that this determination is what governed Rivka's behavior here. Rivka deceived Yitzchak in order to undeceive him, in order for him to realize how easily fooled he was and how he had allowed Esav to deceive him as to his true character for so many years. The ruse was successful, and Yitzchak, whose physical eyesight has grown dim, now sees his sons with a spiritual depth and clarity that he had previously lacked. Rav Soloveitchik notes that in the bracha Yitzchak subsequently bestowed upon a distraught Esav, he omits the name of Hashem, recognizing that Esav desired to live independently. Al charbecha tichyeh, he blesses him, by your own sword you shall live, forfeiting the divine providence that would guide Yaakov and provide for him throughout his life. Hateful and resentful towards his brother, despite the fact that Yaakov had only taken what was rightfully his, having purchased the birthright from Esav, Esav determined to kill his brother as soon as their father would leave the world. And Rivka, hearing of Esav's intentions, resolved to remove Yaakov to the safety of her father's house, where he would find a wife among his cousins. She approached Yitzchak and expressed her distress at the thought that Yaakov might marry among the local daughters of Chet. And Yitzchak called Yaakov and instructed him not to marry among the Kna'ani women, rather to travel to Haran to Rivka's family and marry among his cousins. He then blessed him with the bracha of Avraham, the blessing of the land and prosperity within it. This bracha was never intended for Esav. Yaakov was the true spiritual heir to Avraham's legacy. And Rivka had gained the confidence at the end of the story to come to Yitzchak directly and say to him, we need to provide for the future of our son, the heir to Abraham's legacy, as Sarah had done in her time for Yitzchak. Thank you for learning together.